I would want to correct you. I'm not going to talk about many world theories. I want to talk about probability. So specifically, I want to talk about deterministic branching theories, so like generalized many world theories. I'm just making this distinction because people always like get sidetracked into arguments. Oh no, but we don't actually have many words. Oh, how about the coherence? Oh, how about the preferred basis problem? No, that's not what I want to talk about. So I want to like to assume that we have many words theory, so that actually there is some deterministic branching, and then we want to talk about how probability works in such a hypothetical theory. Then, well, after with beer, we can argue whether we actually have them. Is this a question? Okay. Yeah, so this is like kind of the caricature, but I think that everybody understands. I don't need to explain. So the first thing I would like to talk about are objective probabilities. And in general, like, what are objective probabilities? So that's the question, okay, what does it mean to say that an event E happens with objective probability 2/3. So that's like independent of many words or few words. Just like what does it mean? Like this is a well-loved or well-hated problem in philosophy. People have written like a whole books about it. And then like the kind of old approach is the Frequentosaurus approach that says that tries to reduce objective probabilities to relative frequencies. Just says that probability is just some 9. So it's just the limit of the relative frequency in the case of infinite trials, which doesn't even make sense mathematically, and also doesn't make sense empirically. I mean, if you would need infinite linear trials to find out what the probability was, to be a rather useless definition, which is a bit of a contradiction, because the people who try to defend this approach are usually motivated by being empirical. And then if you want to be empirical, are going to go to like some kind of finite frequentism. So it's not going to be this equation anymore. But then you have the problem that like the probability is actually fluctuate for some finite amount of tries. And this, yeah, I mean, this kind of, yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. Hopefully I'm not going to need to argue about it. No, nobody's going to defend it. So, but there is a good part about frequentism, which is the connection to relative frequencies, because we really do want probabilities to be something empirical, not just some fluffy thing that about belief and so on. So, but the true part about it is what we can always prove, that we can actually prove is some form of the law of large numbers. That says that if some event happens with objective probability p, then after n trials, the objective probability, the frequency fn, deviates more than epsilon from p, is bound by this. So then we need like these two probabilities, the single trial probability and the like a multi-trial probability outside. And then like the deviation from the frequency from the single trial probability, the probability that this deviation is larger than epsilon is bounded by this some exponential function on n and epsilon. I mean, it doesn't really matter the precise form of the bound, but this is just to make it concrete. So this is nice and this is true, but this cannot be used as a definition of probability because it would be circular. This is just like a property that a probability must have. So yeah, then to go to the other way to try to actually define it, then it's like, oh, that's an unfortunate rendering problem. It's like the Bayesian approach that has become quite popular since the 60s. And like nowadays, if you ask any philosopher, they're going to be like a full Bayesian on you. That just says that, okay, probability is a degree of belief, or is a betting odd, or something like this. That just tries to make probability like explicitly subjective, which does have the advantage that, unlike frequentism, it's perfectly consistent mathematically, but it does have the problem that we're trying to talk about objective probability, not subjective one. Yeah, And then, okay, I'm arguing with the philosopher. Come on, what's that? We're talking about agents and beliefs and so on. We want to talk about some objective probability. I say, oh, no. It's not so simple. We have the great David Lewis that showed how we can reduce the objective probability to subjective probability. He says, we can define the objective probability of an event E as the subjective probability of E assigned by an agent that knows the history of the world up to this point and the corrective theory that describes this world. And then it sounds kind of a bit objective because like you try to model out the agent just by talking about the history and the theory. But I mean, even if this works, it's a bit weird because now if we're really just talking about the theory and the history of the world, then what does the agent matter? And it's also kind of a sweeping the dirt under the carpet. So because now the whole responsibility of like defining what the probability is in this mysterious theory here that we didn't talk anything about, yes?
What you're describing doesn't sound like Lewis's principle.
Oh, there are several forms of it, but this, he definitely wrote it in his paper, this equation.
Sure, but having the gloss he put on, I thought was, if you think, according to your theory, that the objective probability is P, and you ask what subjective probability should I assign, you should also assign P.
Yeah.
It wasn't a means to define objective probabilities in terms of subjective probabilities. It was the other way around.
Sorry, you're claiming that it was a means to define subjective probabilities in terms of objective probabilities?
Yeah, it's a normative constraint on what subjective probabilities you should assign if you think that there's some objective indeterminism in the world. Mm-hmm. Not a constraint on theory construction, which sort of locks objective probabilities to subjective probabilities.
So he starts writing exactly this equation that you pointed out. It is rational to assign probability P if you know the objective probability is P. But then afterwards he goes on and then he inverts and then he gets into this equation. He says, but then if you are like me, a radical subjectivist, you can use this to reduce objective probabilities to subjective ones.
Okay, so I'm only familiar with the first half, which is this constraint on subjective probabilities. But it's like an odd two pair of positions to have, to say that your subjective probabilities are constrained by the objective probabilities, and then to say that your objective probabilities are defined by subjective probabilities.
Maybe it would be more fair to say that is a consistency check that both constrain each other. Like whatever subjective probability is and whatever objective probability is, they should be related by something like this or something like the equation you mentioned. Anyway, I think the point I'm trying to make is that this is not a satisfactory definition of objective probability, and you seem to agree, even if you disagree about the history.
I was wondering whether Lewis really believed that equation represents a definition of objective probability. You're sort of reading it as the left-hand side is defined by the right-hand side, but every account of Lewis's stuff that I've heard is more that the right-hand side is defined in terms of the left-hand side. That you should assign as your subjective probability whatever objective probability you think holds.
Well,
why don't you continue?
So I think that's more like a historical question than a scientific one. We can discuss. We can open the paper afterwards and take a look. So, the big problem that I have with this is that it's kind of, even if Lewis didn't say this, if one would try to define objective probability like this, would be like some kind of agent-dependent definition of objective probability. And it's like, what is this agent doing there? I mean, when we talk about objective probability, we should say something like this, like the half-life of plutonium-38 is 88 years. That is just like a property of the plutonium itself. It's like if you take like this pellet of plutonium, it's just like this thing, like burning red hot in your hand. It's a bit bizarre to say that this depends on like the opinion of an agent. And furthermore, I mean, we do have things. Actually, I brought up this point once with a philosopher, and he was talking to me, but this is a man-made object. And then clearly, it only makes sense to use agents to talk about this, because without agents, how could you have plutonium? Like, oh, come on. Radioactive atoms existed much before they were agents. I mean, we even had like natural nuclear reactors where like even chain reactions happened like billions of years before mankind appeared. So, yeah, and then the philosopher, yeah, but now we model this as a probabilistic event, and then who knows what happened there? Who knows what would have happened if we hadn't arisen afterwards? Yeah, I just find this so bizarre. Anyway, so with this discussion, just want to get to like the list of desiderata for objective probabilities. So what do we want them to be? So I really want the definition of objective probability to be something agent-independent. It's really a property of bunch of plutonium, not of anybody's opinion of it. I really wanted to respect the law of large numbers. I wanted this to have this connection to empirical science, because otherwise, I mean, who cares about objective probabilities? And also, I wanted it to respect the principle, like just as an equality, not as a definition, that it should match. Okay, I encourage the risk of digression. It's a bit of a way to say that the objective probability should respect the principle. Because you can say, okay, the principle defines subjective probabilities, then whatever I say the objective probability must be, then it's just that afterwards it defines subjective probabilities such that they match. Yeah, it's kind of true, but still, I like to define, if I found some definition of objective probability for which I couldn't find some definition of subjective probability that was connected to it like this, then it would be really bizarre, to be rather undesirable. That's why I think this is a desideratum. So, okay, so then the solution that I propose for it is kind of just using the fission analogy. Just like if you imagine that you were like a cell that somehow has a consciousness and you're going to undergo division, then you're going to say, oh, and I'm going to end up as the left cell or the right cell or the up or down in this case. It seems like some random event. You cannot predict you're going to be up or down. And but the division happens, and then there's a result. Like one cell believes, yay, I'm up. And you're like, oh, I'm down. Yeah. They can also collect the relative frequencies if you like have several divisions like this. And they most of the cells are going to have a history that goes like kind of half up and half down, which kind of like, okay, sounds like it works for probability 1/2. But it's clearly not like such a good analogy, because like one cell sees the other. So yeah, they clearly are just undergoing fission. It's not an actual probabilistic event like we are used to deal with. But then to make it, to get rid of this problem, and then to make it literally true that we have some kind of division like this. Yeah, I would like to use this theory, Kent's universe. So this was introduced by Adrian Kent as a kind of example to say like how probability in many worlds doesn't make any sense. But I don't really understand his argument. He says some nonsense about qualia, and I think it actually makes perfect sense. So. Yeah, I'm adopting his like a rejected child. So what is Kent's universe? It's a deterministic computer simulation where you have some agents that live inside the simulation. And then in the simulation, there's like a wall where you have like two lamps. And beneath each lamp, there is a display that has a non-negative integer. And like this big blue play button. And then what the agents of the simulation, they press it, and then sometimes the green lamp lights up, and then sometimes like the red lamp lights up. So the agents think of this as some probabilistic event that, okay, we cannot really predict what's going to happen. Sometimes it's one, sometimes another. We can see that like whenever like this number here is zero, this lamp never lights up. So we know something about it, and it seems that like the higher the number is relative to the other, like the most often like one of the lamp lights up. So I think, like, subjectively, it's like pretty much what we think of as a random event, as a probabilistic process. But then, of course, what's going on is that there's a computer deterministic computer simulation. Then when the agent presses play here, then his simulation is deleted. And then, like, several new simulations are created, like two with green lamps and one with a red lamp. And then the agent presses play again, and again, this is deleted, and two new ones are created with green lamps, and another is created with a red lamp.
Yeah.
And so on and so forth. So what are, like, the relative frequencies that some agent would observe there? Like, let's say we want to see to count the number of greens. Like, we just follow along, like, one of these branches here. And then you see, like, okay, the number of the greens, just this, like, combinatorial coefficient. And then the total number of surfaces just fish the n, the number of multiplications at every part. So then if you do 10,000 tries, just an example, then there are, like, this massive amounts of observers. So whoever is running this computer simulation must have, like, a really good hardware. And then the number of observers that have that observe relative frequencies that are, like, very close to UEV3 are, like, a lot of them. So I think intuitively it seems like the law of large numbers is holding up in the sense of, like, the proportion of observers. Then we can also do it more formally, where
Sorry, I kind of missed the key of the thought experiment. Can you just go back and repeat? Was this
here or here?
World? Yeah, you sort of described what Kent said, and then, but kind of no, get further back.
Here.
One more back.
Yeah. Okay,
so this slide to the next slide. I didn't quite catch. Are we talking about a many worlds theory?
Yes.
And what's Kent's take on it? Like, what's different about Kent's universe relative to the usual many worlds story? I kind of missed the.
Oh, well, the difference is that in Kent's universe, this is by fiat a many worlds theory. So, like, by assumption, you have, like, two simulations with a green lamp and one simulation with a red lamp.
That's just simulation. We ourselves are simulations, is that right? The observer and the they're part of the simulation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, the Kent's universe is not supposed to be realistic, but that's the idea. That
the thought experiment is imagine observers who are living inside a computer simulation.
Genau.
And they feel time's passage. And what exactly is the setup? What kind of simulation are they in? They transition into one of three, and then they remember that, and they transition into one of another three, and they remember that, and they keep going?
Yeah, that's pretty much.
So you're just talking about, so it's a sort of probabilistic thing.
Well, it's completely deterministic.
Oh, I see. So you're running it and you're creating more observers every time, every step of the way.
Yes, exactly.
So it's a computer simulation that multiplies subjective perspectives threefold at every step.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the thought experiment.
Well, there is not at every time step. It's like at each time, like some agent press this play button.
Are these the agents that are inside the simulation?
Yes.
Pressing the play button?
Exactly.
And so they have the choice to press it or not to press.
Yeah.
And so when you did your combinatorics, was there a factor of two of whether they pressed or not? I'm kind of unclear on that as well.
Yeah. So here I'm just assuming that, like, the agent, like, here in the beginning, they decided to count relative frequencies. So they just were wondering, okay, we have, like, this lamp thing going on or not. So I'm just gonna, like, press it to play several times and count how many greens and how many reds appeared. And then that's why you have, like, such a uniform, beautiful branching, like a multiplied by three at each time step.
Because we're imagining observers who choose to press the button many times.
Mm-hmm.
So why is the button important? Why not just leave it out and say observers just decide to look at the outcomes?
Wow, just to make an analogy out with a measurement.
Okay.
Yes?
So in one row, the different observers, they are different agents, right? Because they're all created, but they all exist.
They are like the future selves of the same agent. So, like, each agent, they believe they are, like, only one person.
But they're different. They're distinct agents.
Yeah, so they're, like, different computer simulations. So the agent here presses play, the simulation is destroyed, and the three new simulations are created, yeah, each with a new copy of the agent. So like this agent does not communicate with this. These are like completely different computer simulations.
Each agent has the memory of
going back a lot. Exactly. Yeah, and of course the computer is kind of a devious that makes it like this completely seamlessly. Like when the play is pressed, like the computer simulation is paused, and then the new world starts exactly at that point, so that the agents just like a fuse the green lamp lighting up.
What's the difference between the first and second middle line?
This one and this one?
Yeah.
There's no difference. Just that, yeah, or just
does
like.
Does it have to be three?
No.
Could be two?
Yes. This is just like a concrete example. Just, yeah. This is because like this integer is the number of simulations that are going to be created with this number with the green light.
Oh, I see.
And then, yeah, of course, if it sums here to n, then here's gonna there's gonna be like a n future selves.
And the number is 2, 1 above according to some stochastic rule, or there are always two.
No, so they are like tunable. The agents can like change this display to put whatever they want there.
So what the agents does is determined by the computer too.
Well, now we're gonna get this interesting discussion about free will, compatibilism, and so on.
In this world.
Well, let's say the agents have the illusion of free will in this computer simulation.
Whether it's an illusion or not. One question, but in this world, is the algorithm or the program that runs the computer, does it also tell the, does it determine whether it has some pseudo-random number generator, let's say. Does that random number generator determine whether the agent will choose 1, 2, or will press the button or will not?
Well, it's a good question, but I think it's cleaner to define these simulations as completely deterministic, and then we have to force program the agents to press the button. Otherwise, we're not going to have this situation where we can collect relative frequencies. It's a bit undesirable because we'd like to think of the agents as like proper agents like us that can actually make decisions. But
by assumption, you're assuming the observer will press it n times without changing the numbers.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't really matter how the numbers are set.
Well,
for this thought experiment.
Exactly. Well, but maybe think it kind of matters that the agent can decide to do a different experiment with different numbers, so that he can actually see how the frequencies depend on the numbers they set. So that, for example, they can try setting like this number here to 0. And see what happens, and then what happens is that the results are always green. Okay, so now just assume that they did set 2 and 1 there. Now we just like follow a single branch, and then so these observers here that I'm counting. Are like the last observers on the last branch. Let's say they decide they're going to press the button 10,000 times. And then of these observers that press it 10,000 times, okay, how many saw k greens? And then it's just this combinatorial coefficient. And then the total number of observers for the k is 2 and 1. It's going to be 3 to the n. And we're going to have like this that most of them. C frequencies are close to 2 over 3. Okay? So this is like just the intuitive argument about why the law of large numbers should be respected in this toy theory. And can also be more precise and say that, let's say that instead of a 2 and 1, we set the number should be NG and NR. So then like the number of observers that saw k greens out of n is going to be this number, just a combinatorial coefficient. Yeah, and then to get like the proportion that saw k greens, I just divide by the total number of observers, then I get this thing here, which now is looking very close, very much like the binomial distribution, like these numbers here. This is a number between a real number between 0 and 1, and this one as well, and they sum to 1. So then I can define this as mu g, and this one as 1 minus mu g. And then, yeah, this, and then this is just exactly the binomial distribution. Yes?
But is order 1 of observers, you don't see the log. If you go back to the
much more than
order 1.
Sorry?
Nothing. Yeah. The total number of observers that they didn't see the correct frequency, yeah, it's there, there's a huge amount of them. Is this what you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true. But I'm interested in the proportion. So most of them, like the overwhelming majority, do see them. Like,
what's overwhelming about 1.58?
Okay, yeah, that's not overwhelming.
So this is not law of large numbers. Is that the deviation from 2/3 should be going to 0 as n plus 1?
Yep, but it does. I mean, this is a finite n. And I chose 1/100. But if I get like 1/10, then the difference is already too small to be even write down, like the difference like in the eighth decimal digit and so on. Yeah, but so my point is that formally, this is exactly the same thing as the law of large numbers, because this proportion of observers that saw k greens out of n trials, yeah, is just this formula. And then with this formula, we can prove exactly the same formula that we had from the law of large numbers, just that now we have like a different interpretation for it. Instead of saying that like with overwhelmingly large probability, we're gonna see frequency close to the objective probability. We see that like in the overwhelming majority of words, we're gonna see frequencies that are close to the single trial proportion of words. And the bound deviation bound is like this thing that goes exponentially with n. So yeah, it's as overwhelming as in the probabilistic case. Okay. So with this, I would say that the desideratum law of large numbers is respected. So I would like to go to the other desideratum, the principle, and then I would like to do some quick decision theory. Is everybody familiar with decision theory? Nope, probably not, maybe not. Yeah, I'm gonna do it a bit more properly later, so here I just don't want to waste too much time with it. But we say an easy way to define the subjective probability is saying that like the subjective probability S that you assign to an event is how much would you pay to take part in a gamble that will give you $1 Canadian if this event happens, and nothing if this event doesn't happen. So then, like we have this agent here before pressing the button, that nothing happens, and then he pays S Canadian dollars, and then like in all the future, all their future selves, they have like minus S because they paid it, and then the ones that got the green lamp, they also get the reward, that's $1 Canadian, and the one that saw the red lamp got nothing. And then say like this S is going to be the subjective probability of green. Yeah, it's going to be the maximum S that the agent accepts to pay for this gamble. And then if we just like sum the welfare of the future selves and say okay, the sum must be positive, which is kind of saying that the agent cares about them equally, then we see that their welfare is non-negative, if and only if the S is bounded by 2/3. So with this quick and dirt decision theory, says that makes sense for the subjective probability to be 2/3. Okay? And if we generalize for just NG and NR instead of 2 and 3, yeah, we get the same formula. So Yeah. So just repeating the desiderata that we had before. That so I think nobody would disagree that if you define the objective probability like this, like the as the proportion of words, it's an agent independent definition. Also, like the law of large numbers. Yeah, it's not like a conceptually the same thing, but it's mathematically the same thing. Maybe you can disagree or not. And it makes sense to, it respects the probability, the principle. Because if the agent knows that the probabilities are, if these are the objective probabilities, then this should be also their objective probabilities.
Did you say what the principle was?
Yeah, so that's what was on the beginning.
Oh, okay. I'll ask later.
It's that if an agent thinks that the objective probability of an event is P, then they should set the subjective probability equal to P.
There is no objective probability.
No, that's the whole point, that I'm trying to convince you that this...
You just define the proportion of history that give a certain outcome as objective probability.
Yeah, exactly. I'm proposing this definition that the objective probability of...
principle means if the agent is willing to accept that this counting that the law of large numbers gives you is objective probability,
mm-hmm.
then they should accept that as a probability. I don't understand why you need that. Didn't you first and second points already suffice? Because you said the agent wants to maximize the welfare of the, mm-hmm. his or her descendants, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
The sum of the welfare.
Yes.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm. So that's like justifying why it doesn't make sense to respect the principle.
But is it an independent assumption? You have to respect the principle?
It's an independent desideratum. So I'm proposing this definition of objective probability.
Well, your definition should respect.
Exactly. Yeah. I propose that this definition of objective probability. Then I'm arguing that it respects this desiderata. And then to say that it does make sense to bet according to the objective probabilities is this argument that the agent cares equally about the welfare of their future selves.
Okay. I have another question. Maybe I should put it up to the end, but I'll just mention it.
Okay.
I mean. This is based on a certain kind of agent is a kind of selfish, or has a certain kind of selfishness.
Mm-hmm.
And then they act according, and they have a certain, look to me, arbitrary rule that they apply their selfishness to the sum of all their descendants.
Yep, that's this is arbitrary. But this is, as I say, this is quick under decision theory.
Okay, maybe it is. But once you make that assumption, then you derive this.
Yeah.
What is it to do with physics? That's what I don't understand.
Yeah, well, so this is why I don't like subjective probabilities in physics. But I'm arguing that our definition of objective probability should be such that we can make a sensible definition of a subjective probability. That we can argue that some kind of rational agent that has some kind of preferences, that some reasonable should use these objective probabilities. I mean, it's not like some fundamental, but it's something that, well, we really like to be true. It's hard to say that this is gonna change what physics is, but this is how we believe probabilities behave. So if we have a probability that doesn't behave like this, yeah, what is this number if not that we want to call probability?
I would think, since we started the discussion, I would think that if we can derive the phenomenological consequences of probability,
mm-hmm.
you should be very happy with that, independent of whether these rational agents or irrational agents
are
or not. I mean, can you derive the ideal gas law or something? Like that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, fluctuation theory, all those things are objective physical applications of probability.
Yeah, no, I think that's a reasonable point of view. I think that's what actually matters. But the philosophers, they really like the principle. So maybe you also should care about making them happy. So anyway, so do you think that I managed to respect this desiderata, or you think they don't actually work for this definition of objective probability? Or do you think there should be a different desideratum that I didn't consider? Like, this is okay, we think this is nice for objective probability? Yes? A green guy?
I find it seems like your analysis of the third point here, principle, was with respect to the agents in the simulation.
Yep.
It feels like it should have been with respect to the agents outside the simulation, ones who have the computer and presumably don't see any probability here whatsoever. I find it odd that we're sort of treating the agents inside the simulation as proper agents in three.
Why? I mean, that's the. I mean, the point is to try to do an analogy to our world. Like, imagine that we could just assume by fiat that our world has this kind of like a deterministic branching. And then I would like to argue like this. I'm just talking about this computer simulation with this restricted agents, just because in this case we can define it to be true. But yeah, I think you can argue, okay, these are not really agents because they live in a deterministic world, and then or can say, oh, that we don't have a strong AI. But that's kind of missing the point, no?
I'm not sure. I guess I'm just saying they don't seem like the only agents in the theory, so I'm not sure why the third point is sort of only being argued with respect to them. I feel like there's more agents in the world, and presumably we want the principle to hold for all possible agents.
From the agents who built the simulation,
could also argue that the probability is only an illusion experienced by these agents inside. And whatever the principle is, only makes sense to apply them to agents that I think there is such a thing as randomness.
By probability, do you mean sort of the traditional sense of a way of quantifying the ignorance of the agent?
Nope.
Or something more than that? Something completely different?
Yeah, so I'm proposing a definition. So. Yeah, but then you're talking about the desideratum. So you want the probability to be something that measures the ignorance of an agent.
That is one definition of probability.
That's not the definition. That's the desideratum. So there's not enough to to define it. So yeah, I could put it here on the fourth line as, okay, what to quantify ignorance. But yeah, in this case here, it's it would clearly not apply because if the agents knew what is going on, I mean, there's nothing to be ignorant about. They know that they press this button, there are going to be this many future selves like this and this many future selves like this. So yeah, so in this case, this...
The ignorance in that case is not knowing which branch you're going to go to.
Well, you know that there are going to be three future selves, and each of them is going to be...
How is that different from quantifying my... If I roll a die, I know it's going to be one of six outcomes with a given probability that I've defined somehow.
Mm-hmm.
That's different from saying I know deterministically which outcome I'm going to get.
No, it's just that what is that you are ignorant about? So you know that there are going to be three agents in the future, and all the agents are going to remember being you, and two of them are going to see green, and another one is going to see red. Like, what is it you don't know about the future?
Maybe I don't understand. Are you trying to maximize the outcome for the set of all agents? Is that? Or this?
You mean in this equation?
Is it for a given branch at the end? You want to maximize?
So this is like for everybody. Like, I care equally about the welfare of all my future selves. So I just sum the amount of money each future self has.
Sum of all future.
Mm-hmm. Yes?
This rule of the sand, it just doesn't go in the direction you want to go in. But could I change the game and say that if you get a red light, you're dead? And so the only agents that exist in the future are those that had green lights at every stage.
Sorry, I couldn't understand your question. Could you speak louder?
If you change the game so that the only agents that exist in the future are those that had green lights at every stage, then the class of agents whose welfare you would care about would be different.
Well, I think I would have like a serious misgiving about playing this game. I don't want to play a game where like I'm gonna die as one of the possibilities.
Why? Because being immortal is also one of the possibilities.
Sorry, Bina?
Being a descendant who saw a green light at every stage is also a possibility.
Well, yes, but if I don't play the game, then all my future selves will be alive. If I play the game, some of them are going to be dead, so I'm not playing this game.
You don't have a choice.
Whoa. I'm going to run away from you. So, yeah, if I had to play such a game, well, then I would count differently, like the welfare of the my dead selves. So I would put like some big negative number here, and this would change the probabilities. Sure.
That's my point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, it would depend on how much you put it, what the number you put there, but yeah, essentially, it would make. Would think of it as the red outcome is very probable, because you really want to avoid it. But yeah, and then the probability, this objective probability would not match the objective probability anymore. But like the definition that we have in decision theory is with this simple game, you just get one in the event you want and zero otherwise. So this is the only thing I want to match the objective probabilities. If you have different games, yeah, then you can get something completely different. Yeah? Sorry, actually you were first.
Back to your definition of the objective probability.
I didn't actually write it down.
So was it meant to be...
I can put it here and say that this is my definition of objective probability.
And so... Like earlier in your example where you had the 10,000 trials,
yep.
You pointed out that, you know, some fraction would see the relative frequencies be between two-thirds, you know, minus 100, two-thirds plus 100.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the objective probability in that case? Like, what's your definition in that case? So the observer at the first level knows that he's going to push the button 10,000 times and
mm-hmm.
Let's say he predicts what's going to happen. He says, right, so I say the objective probability is...
So the general definition is that the proportion of words where some event you care about happens. So then you can, we talk in this case, what's the proportion of words where the frequency is between this and this? And then I can talk about this objective probability and calculate it with like this binomial distribution.
So the things that you're assigning probabilities to are not green outcome, red outcome.
Well, not only.
Two-thirds and one-thirds, but rather this particular history of greens and reds in this particular order. Is that correct? That those are the things you're assigning probabilities to?
Well, you can assign probabilities to several different things.
Well, I'm asking you what your proposal for the definition is. What's your definition and what are the probabilities being assigned to?
So I'm a... My definition, the probability of an event is the proportion of simulations where this event happens. What I am computing is the probability of it being... The probability of being green in a single trial, which is this. And I'm also computing like the distribution over many trials, which is this.
Okay, so here's an event. The green light went off.
Yep.
I'm going to push the button 10,000 times. Your proposal is that the objective probability for that event is?
Just put here 10,000 and 1 over 100. Then you're going to get some bound on the probability.
At which stage of the simulation?
But I thought it was up to me to decide what event we're assigning probability.
It is, but what's the meaning of the event is the green light on top? Does it mean at least once it went up in the whole series?
It sounds to me like you're answering the question I asked as, yes, the only things to which we assign probabilities are histories of light bulbs going green and red. So if that were the answer, that wasn't Mateus's answer, but if that is the answer, then I would just say, okay, I have a particular sequence in mind. You know, let's say the first half is green, the next half is red. So the objective probability that you would assign to that event is just one over the full number of sequences. That, or like,
yeah, there's,
I just want one concrete example where you can say, oh, for that case, the objective probability is this. I mean, that's what kind of what I'm missing, because.
Yeah, well, let's say that the number of green is one and the number of red is one. And then like the probability of seeing 10,000 greens is just, well, one should they choose the 10,000? That's like the probability of a given sequence. Is this what you're asking?
Yeah, but then it seems like all this mathematics about the law of large numbers seems kind of irrelevant to that definition. If you just say, I use the binomial formula, then why are we talking about the law of large numbers at all? Like, I'm very confused, I guess, about...
Wasn't the name of the game here from the beginning to, you have a box and it's going to, given a single press, it's going to flash red or green, and you're trying to define the probability that it will flash green. It's sort of like a property of this box as far as this agent is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that's trying to be estimated. And the formula you gave for it is defined as this ng over it.
Well, but I mean, yeah, this, well, with this, this is a theorem. And then the definition is that that this is the probability. I'm just saying that, yeah, if this is the probability, or the definition of probability is the proportion of simulations, then it matches. Then like the single try probability is this, and then a theorem that the multi-try probability is this. I don't want to just start by postulating that the multi-try probability is the binomial. This would be insane. Yes?
There might be a linguistic issue here that could be cleared up, which is the meaning of the word event.
Mm-hmm.
So physics tends to be used in different ways sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
It's a space-time point and so on. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the usage that your usage here is the same as the one in probability theory in general,
yep.
Which is that you have a history space, or they often call it a sample space, but in this case, it's the space of all possible histories through
mm-hmm.
that tree. And then an event is just a set of histories, or more precisely, a measurable set of histories.
Yep.
And then that's the definition of event.
Mm-hmm.
And then the probability of the event is just the number, in this case, if it was 50-50, or in your case, it's just the cardinality of the number of histories normalized
yeah.
to the total number of histories.
Precisely.
Is that
right? Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. More generally, I'm assigning probabilities to sequences of greens and reds, or sets of sequences of greens and reds.
From what David said, it seems to me that you might want to answer my question as follows. I am assigning objective probabilities to events like the green light will go off or the red light will go off.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of it as an IID thing. It's, you know, we're going to do this many times and
mm-hmm.
it makes sense to talk about the objective probability, which is common to all the trials that I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, the answer to the question, you know, what is the objective probability for green light, is exactly ng over ng plus nr. I think that is the right answer to my question. And you're basically saying, here's this thing, and at the end of the day, the things we're assigning probabilities to are things that are localized at one time step, and the, you know, we conceive of, like from the outside, we say, oh, it's all deterministic, and everything's happening, but then you sort of say, from the subjective perspective of the guy in the computer program, he can think of his world as at every time step, there's an objective probability of 2/3 that the green light goes off. And all this business about law of large numbers is basically to say that if you make that assumption about the objective probability, you know, most of your tools of probability theory will work out in the way that you expect.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of just trying to get clear right now what the proposal is, because there was a slide where you said, here's the objective probability, here's what I'm assigning to it. But I think the story I just gave is what you're trying to argue for.
No, it's not.
Well, that's, it so, seems like a reasonable thing to be arguing for, given everything else you said.
my point is like we have like a definition of a probability, or like okay that we like, let's say of this function mu, and then this definition I can apply here and here for the single trial and multi trial case, and a desideratum is that this thing should work out for this definition. And I think it's really necessary that I can actually just talk about it, what it is, and then compute this instead of like computing the thing and then saying that okay, like the result of like this law of large numbers is gonna be is what the probability is. That's maybe circular. I don't know. Yeah.
So my understanding is that this is supposed to be relevant for understanding the many levels of interpretation.
Yes?
So I can ask you, how is a person in your scenario who believes or knows that they're actually in a many world situation, how is their situation concretely different than the situation of somebody who believes that they're one person with one box which has some intrinsic probability to flash green?
Well, because in this case, I can give a definition of objective probability, and in the case of the age of a box, I mean, what's the definition? I don't know of any.
So, is that supposed to be an argument that we're more rational to believe we're in the situation of gay than in the situation of the person who's just one agent in one universe, some intrinsic randomness to be about?
Yeah. So right now, I'm trying to argue that if you are in a single world, then there is no definition of objective probability. But if you are in a deterministic Bayesian theory, then there is a coherent definition of objective probability.
So, but I'll give you a definition. I'm in a single world.
Yeah.
But my definition of objective probability, I'll give you two different ones. You tell me the difference between them. One of them is, I choose to believe a fairy tale, which is that I'm in a multi-world situation, and I will define my objective probability to be that which it would be if that was my situation. My second definition of objective probability is I believe there exists a God who controls the machine and makes sure that there are always twice as many green lights as red lights over the wrong sequences. Both are fairy tales, both allow me to make a deduction that I'm not otherwise allowed to do. Why aren't I allowed to believe that there isn't a notion of objective probability in the sense that you wish? But if I really want one, I can adopt a fairy tale. And either one of those fairy tales will.
Well, the problem with the first fairy tale is like a general problem with this kind of second order theory. If you believe that you make some fairy tale to believe something, then well, this is just like extra baggage. You just believe the thing directly. Maybe a more concrete example. Let's say that you believe that actually the Earth is in the center of the universe, but you anyway use Newton's equations to calculate the motions. Just that they move as if they would be. If according to Newton's equations, then I think like this fantasy that the world, Earth is the center of the universe, and as if that, then should just as well believe directly in the Newton's equations.
But what is your argument supposed to establish? Is your argument supposed to establish that it's more rational to believe that we're in a many world situation than to believe that we're in a single world situation, and there just lacks a sensible notion of objective probability.
So the argument started with like somebody telling me that probability doesn't make sense in many worlds.
Yes, I'm one of the people who would assert that.
So that's why. Yeah. Well, then I'm arguing two things here. First, I'm presenting definition of probability in many worlds that I think makes sense. I think that's like a counter argument. And then I'm also add to add insult to injury. I'm also arguing that you cannot make a, give me such a coherent definition in the single word case.
But what I'm missing, maybe I'm somebody else. I'm missing the fulcrum of the argument.
So, well, the fulcrum of the argument is just that I'm trying to present a coherent definition of objective probability. Yeah, so in the deterministic branching theory, so we can, I'm gonna get to many words in a second, but I'm just saying that like the deterministic branching itself is not a problem, it's actually a solution. This is what makes it possible to have a objective probability. Yeah, sorry, Denis was...
This may be a side remark, I don't want to like delay like the next step of the conversation too much. So here, like, there is a second thing that we idealize in that setup is that we can repeat the exactly the same simulation n times, which is something that never happens in the real world. So it, in a sense, that would make sense to speak of objective probabilities in a simulated universe where you can control experimental situations such that they repeat exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the real world, it's always going to be an approximation because you can't reproduce the same experimental condition twice. Mm-hmm. So,
oh,
have you thought of that? Or?
Well, I mean, not really, but the theory allows you to have to describe some quantum state for some exactly repetition of an experiment, and I think that's like if you're just talking about some, the abstract definition of the of probability, yeah, then you can worry about that. This idealized scenario. Then, if you want to be a bit more serious. Then we can say, okay, in reality, how well can we approximate this idea of like identical repetitions? Yeah. Then I would have to convince you that the approximation is good enough, and the idea of approximation doesn't like undermine the argument for actually having probabilities. But I mean, I think that's like a next step. If I can convince you that in the idealized case they work, then I'm happy, and then I can take on the non-ideal case. Yeah, sorry.
So suppose we take your definition of objective probability for whatever may specify. Here's the definition of objective probability of endorsing or deterministic branching theory, and I replace the word objective with subjective. So I say, you're providing a definition of subjective probability for a deterministic branching theory.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you object to me calling your proposal a proposal for subjective probability? What makes it a proposal for objective probability?
Mm.
Because on the face of it, it does feel very similar to, for example, David Deutsch's approach to making sense of probability in many worlds, where you use decision theory to infer subjective probabilities. And the big difference seems to be you use the word objective probability where he would use the word subjective probability. And I guess I'm missing what you think makes your definition a definition of objective probability.
Yeah, well, the first thing that makes it in the objective is that agent dependent, whereas Deutsch's definition is explicitly age dependent. Another thing is that...
So can you go into that in more detail? Like what do you mean by... Deutsch's definition is agent-dependent.
Well,
because it seems to me Deutsch would say, no matter what agent you are, you know, if you believe in the many world interpretation and you find yourself in this situation where the spin is alpha up plus beta down, then, and you believe in decision theory, then you have to assign the probability alpha squared to getting the outcome. It doesn't matter what agent you are, that's what you have to do. So in that sense, I think it's just as agent-independent as your proposal.
So I... cannot say what Deutsch says, but I can tell you what Wallace says because I have asked him. Yeah, so he's talking about, okay, these are these probabilities are like how a rational agent would bet. So it's really about rational agents, and then it depends on the definition of rationality, and then you can have different notions of rationality that are going to give you different probabilities, and it really depends on the notion of betting. Oh, so it's not about collecting relative frequencies. That that's kind of like a secondary. then he can say that, okay, since the Bonjour is dead, then the probabilities of the relative frequencies are going to be like this, but it's kind of an unsatisfactory way. And then I'm complaining to him about, yeah, but shouldn't they be objective? And then Wallace's answer is that, no, but objective probabilities are defined by the principle. And therefore, they are actually objective, because this is my ideal agent that knows the quantum state and the theory of the universe. So at least he is very keen on saying that the probabilities are subjective, and they are only objective insofar as they're like the best possible probabilities that one can assign. Yeah, but so to your point about like this, are there coefficients of the quantum state, like this alpha and beta, that could be related to this NG and then R? Yeah, they are all objective probabilities of the world in the same way. This is true. But in Wallace's case, he doesn't argue about what these coefficients mean. He just said, no, these are just some things that I have to use in my probability calculus to be rational. And then I'm saying here that they are the number of words. Well, maybe for you it's a kind of a matter of the semantics, but I find that important. And also in the case of Wallace, I mean, the law of large numbers is kind of accidental, but for me it's like a fundamental that the probability to actually should be something that is connected to the empirical science. I mean, if we didn't have something like this, then I mean, this wouldn't be a notion of objective probability. Wallace would never say something like this, that most of the observers will observe frequencies in close to this probability, because for him this makes no sense. But for me, this is like the crucial point.
It makes no sense.
Yeah.
Well, why do you say it makes no sense? Just a mathematical fact. You mean he's not interested in it?
No. So Wallace, he's arguing in the quantum many worlds case.
In that case, it may be false.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In that case, it's false. That's another question.
But yeah, he's going to say that we cannot count observers, and then we cannot make statements like this, and so on. Yes?
So when you say the difference is in your subjective attitude, the elements of the definition, like the definition seem mathematically equivalent, but the attitude that you take to those elements is different, or you take it to be objective and maybe Deutsch would take it to be subjective.
They are not mathematical equivalents, so completely different. approaches. So I'm actually, maybe I'm not actually going to do it because it's getting a bit late, but like the second part of my talk was precisely about showing how the Deutsch Wallace approach works. And the mathematics is completely different. It's not a matter of taste.
It's not certain.
Well, if you would ever get there, I would show you.
When you brought up decision theory in your talk,
yep.
Was that part of your construction? That's something you were appealing to? Or was it, we're not going to use decision theory? I just kind of forgotten how it fits into the story. Right, so was decision theory something you took on board as part of the derivation of what you're doing?
So yeah, for me, this is a desideratum that I want a definition of objective probability that meshes together well with decision theory. And yeah, and then I kind of use this quick and dirty decision theory to argue that it does make sense to use these objective probabilities to do betting. So
when you criticize Deutsch and Wallace on, you know, endorsing a theory of rational decision making, and that therefore makes it subjective, I mean, have you not endorsed a decision theory here? And why does your endorsement of decision theory not make your definition of probability subjective, but Wallace and Deutsch's endorsement of a particular decision theory makes theirs subjective?
Well, because I started defining objective probability, and then I showed that if you do this decision theory with this definition of rationality, then you get a subjective probability that matches the objective one. But Deutsch does an argument the other way around. He starts by defining this Hume theory, and then he ends up with the probability.
So your use of decision theory is to try to connect your objective probabilities to subjective probabilities and show that you've satisfied your desideratum of fulfilling the principle.
Yeah, exactly.
And whereas theirs is kind of part of their derivation of what the subjective probability should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they start by defining probability as subjective probability, and then they put on like a axioms of rationality, and then should derive what the probability function must be. Yeah. For me, it's like, okay, I first define what probability is, and then I check that I can make a decision theory that for which the principle works out.
It feels kind of similar. Like if you say, I'm going to lay down a bunch of axioms, and I'm going to demand the principle, which says that the subjective probabilities have to equal the objective probabilities. Then you're effectively laying down your axioms on the objective probabilities themselves. I mean, you can phrase it as, oh no, these are objective, and the axioms are constraints on the subjective probabilities. But the subjective probabilities are completely, you know, welded to the objective probabilities. They're not allowed to differ because of your endorsement of the principle.
Well,
so it does feel very much like kind of a semantical difference whether you say, oh no, I'm not thinking of them as subjective probabilities, I'm thinking of them as objective. But they're going to be constrained by all these constraints and subjective probabilities because I've demanded the principle be satisfied.
Your claim is that it comes out.
Yeah.
No, no, but it's only defined with respect to a particular decision theory.
Mm-hmm.
You've had to pick the same decision theory.
Yeah,
if I went for a different decision theory, the principle would be violated, and you say, I haven't satisfied my desideratum, let's go back to the table and change the decision theory.
Yeah, exactly. So,
sorry. Is there some decision?
Yeah.
So this
evades a criticism that's applied to Deutsch. Sorry. Yeah, so people complain about Deutsch Wahler saying, okay, this just depends on having this particular definition of rationality that you should sum the welfare of your agents differently, and then somehow I have some different preferences that like a. I really like the color green, and then I'm gonna put like the greater reward to just seeing green. Then my probabilities are gonna be different. Yeah, and then Wallace doesn't have a good answer to that. His answer is just that yeah, this is true, but this would violate my axioms, which I think are reasonable. Well, then I can say, well, yeah, your problem. I mean, the actual probabilities are gonna be what they are. And then your decision theory is silly because it doesn't respect the principle.
But what if I took this strategy? I'm going to use the decision theory that you grant as silly,
mm-hmm.
but I'm going to assign different objective probabilities from the ones you assign, which allow me to maintain the principle. So my silly decision, together with my silly choice of objective probabilities, enforces the principle. And then I say, look, I've satisfied all your desiderata.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'd have to come back and say, well, no, you chose the wrong decision theory. You should have chosen this decision theory, and then you would have gotten the right choice. But now you're back to exactly where Deutsch and Wallace is. You do have to make a commitment on what's a reasonable choice of decision theory to get a good definition of probability coming out.
No, I mean, you just mentioned en passant. I'm going to choose a definition of objective probability such that this will work out.
It isn't?
No.
Doesn't that violate your law of large numbers then? If you mess up your probabilities, eventually you're going to draw enough samples that deviate from your definition of probability.
Yeah, I mean, the...
Not if these are two independent constraints.
Well, the onus is on someone of you then to propose this other objective definition. I'm not saying it can or cannot be done, but it's not obvious.
Okay, you're right. It might not be possible that there's a silly choice of objective probabilities to couple to my silly choice of decision theory. But on the other hand, are you really suggesting that there's, you know, this set of things can uniquely pick out one decision theory amongst all decision theories? You know, this is the only decision theory that's consistent with an assignment of objective probabilities and the other axioms. Because that seems kind of surprising that there's no other choice of decision theory.
Well, there are several decision theories that give the same answer, if this is what you're asking. But if you're asking whether like these three desiderata uniquely imply that the probabilities are what they are, I think the answer is also no. But that's why I'm starting by arguing that the objective probability should be the proportional of simulations. So I'm saying that this is kind of prima facie obvious. I don't know. It's a bit hard to argue on that because that's like very low, close to the ground. But if you started with that notion of objective probability, then everything follows.
That strikes you as totally opposite to the whole arc of the talk, which was supposed to be to convince us that this was a good definition of objective probability.
Yes.
Not that this definition of objective probability is a priori obvious and so doesn't need justification. I mean, you can't have it both ways. You can give me an hour-long talk saying, there, now I've justified it. And at the end say, well, actually, it's a priori obvious and it doesn't need justification, and that's how it all goes.
Yeah, it's true. You cannot have it both ways. So, yeah, but... Okay, then I would go with it's a choice that sounds natural, and a justification for it is that it respects the desiderata. So then, if you find me a different choice that you can also convince me that sounds natural and respects the desiderata, then yeah, I can think about it. But yeah, that's the problem, about choosing a definition that you cannot really say there is a true way to choose a definition there.
Maybe your case could be made more convincing if you proved a uniqueness theorem. If you said there aren't other choices of decision theory coupled with objective probability that satisfy these desiderata, and that is why this choice of objective probability is the right one. So if I'm right and there's a silly decision theory coupled to silly choices of objective probabilities that still are consistent with this, and it kind of undermines your argument because I can sort of go with these other notions and I've satisfied all your desiderata.
Mm-hmm.
And I think then you would be in a similar boat to Deutsch and Wallace. But if you can prove a kind of uniqueness theorem, then it seems like you've gone beyond what Deutsch and Wallace did.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering if it's possible to do so or that I have a counterexample. I did consider this a long time ago, but I forgot the answer. I think that I forgot the answer because I could find a silly choice. Because if I couldn't, then I would be very proud and I would have remembered it. Yeah, I think it's actually possible to... there is like a function that you can apply to the numbers, like to NG and R, such that if you define objective probabilities with this function of the numbers, then you respect the law of large numbers, and the decision theory is also going to work out in that way. I think, yeah.
And it feels like you haven't really got agent independence. Because if I decide to be silly, choose these functions, choose my alternative decision theory.
No, but now the agent is like the person who is creating the theory. If that for you is agent dependent, then there's nothing in the world that's agent independent. Like then, I don't know, AGR, Newtonian mechanics, everything is going to be agent dependent.
Maybe I misunderstood. I thought you said that you could assign some functions of NG and NR as your objective probabilities.
Mm-hmm.
As a choice of definition of objective probabilities that's an alternative to taking just NG over NR plus NG.
Mm-hmm.
You weren't saying that?
I said yes. I did say that. But I'm saying, how could this be agent dependent? This is about this is the agent independent definition of objective probability. Then everything goes out. An agent dependent definition would be a kind of definition from decision theory. That is the probabilities are betting odds instead of probabilities are something in the world. I'm arguing that. If saying that the probability is this element of the world, if this is not objective for you, if this is not agent dependent, then what can be agent independent?
I'm misunderstanding what you're saying.
So do you agree that Newton's laws are agent independent?
When I challenged you to say, what was it about your definition that made it not subjective probability, you said, unlike Deutsch and Wallace, it's agent independent. And then, mm-hmm. you know, why is it agent independent? Because there's no freedom in your choice of what decision theory to use and, you know, things like that. But if it turns out that there's a freedom, that, you know, even under all these iterata, there's a freedom in what I choose as my definition of objective probabilities and my definition of decision theory, then I think you haven't really got a difference with what the Deutsch-Wallace crowd is doing. And you can't really say that, you know, what makes your probabilities objective is that there's no freedom in them. That's what I'm saying.
I think you are asking too much for having uniqueness to mean agent independence. Because, again, what makes Deutsch and Wallace agent dependent is because it explicitly depends on which axioms of rationality you are using. So right. It's about how you describe the agent. So if you just define it, like the probability as like this silly function of NG and NR, yeah, it is going to depend on what you choose as a function, but this is not about agents or rationalities or decision theories, like a postulate that you gave.
But you're just declaring that it's not about that. I mean, at the beginning I asked, what is it that makes it appropriate to call these objective probabilities versus subjective probabilities? The answer is not because I said so by fiat, you know, it's because I got all these reasons, like, oh, there's a lack of arbitrariness in my choice relative to the arbitrariness in the Deutsch-Wallace choice.
I think you're reading too much. Just call it objective because it's something you can apply to in the world that corresponds to. It's a ratio of two numbers. The number of histories that have such and such a property. Maybe it's like green or something.
I don't dispute that you could think of this as a proposal for objective probability. I just want to know, what is it about this proposal such that I couldn't appropriate it as in a project for defining subjective probability in a deterministic branching universe. Okay, so say I want to appropriate all of this for my own project of defining subjective probability correctly in a deterministic branching universe. And so Matthias's answer to that was, well, I thought the answer was, well, you know, unlike the subjective approaches where, you know, where there's some sort of arbitrariness in your choice of rational decision theory to use, here there's not. But now I feel like there is a certain arbitrariness creeping in. That's my worry.
I think he's just saying, I've defined an objective notion of probability. And now we see whether the other pieces fall into place or do not fall into place. Does it expect a lot of large numbers? Does it lead to some, is it compatible with some decision theory or with the decision theory? I don't know exactly
mm-hmm.
how unique this decision theory is.
So if
the claim is, yes, it does. So I think that's all. Is there anything more being claimed than that?
Not really. But if you are asking like the sociological question, like what stops you from appropriating this for a subjective probability program, well, then I can answer and say that it's this, because like this thing is for Wallace a pure heresy. Yeah.
I don't really know the Deutsch Wallace, so it's hard.
Actually,
that's right. Okay, thanks for the questions.
And then I wanted to raise a different question.
Mm-hmm.
Question, what do you mean by objective? It seems to me this is what you might call a positivistic viewpoint.
No, please, don't say positivistic. You're gonna make my heart sick.
Oh, okay. I didn't mean to insult you. Let me say what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It seems what you're doing, you're reviving, or you're it's not even reviving because it's always been. There's an old definition of probability, which is usually. Discussed in connection with Laplace, called I think they call it Laplacian,
mm-hmm.
which is that the probability of some event is just the cardinality proportional to the cardinality
mm-hmm.
of that event. The language one often sees is number of favorable cases
mm-hmm.
divided by the total number of cases.
Mm-hmm.
So, at your end, the number of favorable divided by the total
mm-hmm.
number of favorable plus unfavorable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the same thing as saying it's cardinal of the event you're looking at divided by the cardinality of the whole sample space.
Mm-hmm.
That's the definition you're using. Now that definition can be used in connection with hypothetical thinking or in connection with realistic. That's why I'm calling it positivistic.
Mm-hmm.
Someone could make all these calculations, and they have made these calculations, without having many worlds. Just say I enumerate all the possible histories, and I compute this number. And that enumeration of the possible histories is to complete the objective, if you believe that the kinematics of the theory is objective, that the ontology as philosophers would say is an objective part of the theory, then that calculation is equally objective. It's just in one case you don't say all those possibilities are real,
mm-hmm.
and in the other case you do. But I don't see that the one, the reason I call it positivistic is it seems like you're not willing to call it objective unless all those possibilities that you enumerate are realized or are present
mm-hmm.
in the world. And I don't see why you should withhold the word objective from the other case. But they're just hypothetical
possibilities. Well, I do withhold the word objective to Laplace's probabilities for a different reason. Because how do you know which cases are equiprobable? Like,
no, you didn't say that. You're defining probability. This is what you've done here, too.
No,
you just
count. Oh, well, Laplace definitely needs a notion of equiprobability. You say,
okay, when you say Laplace. I thought this was Laplace's.
Yeah, the principle of indifference.
There is this proposal, anyway, mm-hmm. just to define probability.
Mm-hmm. But this is
it doesn't
true.
It work in a lot of cases. That's quite true.
Mm-hmm. Oh, but
you've given a case where it does work, and you're arguing on the basis of that case
mm-hmm.
that it gives a good definition of probability.
But just let me finish the sentence. Just the fundamental problem with this approach is that you need to have some way of saying that like in the denominator I have like the total number of cases, then I have like a six size of the die, and then I just put six there, and then like I have like two favorable cases, so I just put two there. But then for this to make sense, I really need to argue that. These events are equiprobable, so this is like I shouldn't like wait to put like a six with like a higher weight, and in the case of Laplace, I mean, people just argue this by using like the principle of indifference that I don't have any knowledge to say that one thing or the other, so I just say that they are like it should be. So I have no reason to not permute the numbers.
You're talking about the probabilities in one throw of the die.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the whole history space.
Uh-huh.
The exact probabilities that you gave there.
Mm-hmm.
This is more like what Rob was talking, what you're saying. No, I'm not trying to say that. I'm saying you assign probabilities to the whole, to events in the whole repeated ensemble.
Yeah, I also do that.
Experiments. And in that context, you're using the Laplacian definition. And I don't see why, I think that's what you're doing. If that's not what you're doing,
so
correct me, but I think that's what you're doing.
It is very similar to Laplace.
If you are doing that, then I don't see why it can't be done equally validly, or more validly in my mind, by just regarding them as hypothetical possibilities, hypothetical histories, rather than really existing. What do you gain by having them be really existing histories? You can still do the counting. But if you regard them as just hypothetical histories, then it accords much more with common sense or everyday way. We don't need to multiply worlds just to define, just to count.
So,
favorable and unfavorable cases.
Yeah, one thing that makes it unobjective is that if I'm talking about a quantum state, I actually have some amplitude associated to its outcome, and this amplitude is an objective thing. So it's not just about ignorance. But as you point out correctly, this doesn't require the this the history should be real instead of hypothetical. I could still do some kind of a hypothetical many worlds possibility and count them like this. But that would be already objective probability instead of subjective. Yeah, I guess I could. You could say that, yeah, you have like this hypothetical history, and that's like a consistent definition of objective probability in a but then what would be the definition of objective probability in this case?
Like, can I interrupt quickly?
Yeah.
We've got like a minute or so left, so
yeah.
Feel free to continue the discussion, but also if you have any
comments
to get through before we end.
I wanted to go, I did want to get somewhere, which I'm not going to, but okay, let me quickly go about the generalization. So this is the moment that everybody has been waiting for, actual many words interpretation. So let's just say that we have some more general many words. So instead of saying that we have like a number of observers in a branch and a number of observers in another branch, we just have branches that branch like this, like GR, 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 GR. And then I just say that you can assign a measure to such a branch. Then I can like again try to count like okay, that was the total measure of like the branches where I saw like three greens or two greens or one green and zero green. Then it's going to be this. And now if I assume that this measure here is like a product measure, that I really can apply a measure to each branch and just like one branch red and green, then I'm going to get like these are the total measures. And then you see like the binomial stuff appearing. Yeah, and exactly the same calculation appears as before, where this is like the total measure of observers that see k greens out of n. And then now the proportion of observers that see k greens out of n is this. So then there was nothing in particular about like using counting numbers with like counting words with non-negative integers. The only thing that we need for such an argument to hold is that we can assign a product measure to the branch, to the words. So in any many words sphere where the measure of words is multiplicative, then we can prove like this law of large numbers thingy. And I claim that this solves the empirical problem of many words that people always complain about. It doesn't make sense to measure relative frequencies in many words because what does this mean? Like, we know that all frequencies will happen. Yeah, this is true, but we know that in most words, you're going to measure frequencies close to the number of words. So if you want to discover what is the correct way to measure words, yep, you can measure, you can collect the relative frequencies, and in most words, you're going to be correct. And then to apply this reason to the concrete many worlds interpretation, then okay, I'm just gonna go it quickly. So I just want to, I can apply this measure of worlds. It's like just the true norm of the world, and then it does work out. It is multiplicative, so the Born rule is gonna have this nice property that we can use it to guess what the Born rule is. So it makes sense to actually collect frequencies to know that the frequencies are given by the Born rule. But it's not enough to argue just about this like a multiplicative measure, because it's easy to prove that if the measure is multiplicative, then the measure is of this form here. It's like the P norm to the P, and then it's also multiplicative. So this argument only restricts the Born rule to be like mod of amplitude to the p. It doesn't say that p equals 2. So, yeah, I don't have a good argument in the many worst case about why should the measure give us the Born rule. Yeah, so that was the objective probability part and clearly everything that I'm going to say today. Thank you for the attention.